It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, Giants and Jets fans? Welcome to the latest episode of our Talk is Cheap Giants and Jets podcast from NJ Advanced Media, the Star Ledger, and NJ.com. It is Tuesday, April 30th here, Tuesday morning. Daryl Slater and then Andy Vasquez, of course, will join you in a second. Wrapping up the 2024 NFL draft, certainly an interesting one for the Jets as well as the Giants. As much for who they did get as they didn't, especially on the Giants side of things. And we'll go through it all. But appreciate everyone joining us. Hope everyone, I guess, enjoyed the draft. And I don't know if you all sat around on Saturday and watched the whole thing, but we have plenty of coverage up there, nj.com/Jets and nj.com/Giants, for if you missed anything, any analysis or whatever. Basically, I'll run through real quick here the thumbnail sketch of what these teams did, and then we'll get into it, of course. The Giants first round try to trade up for Drake May. The Patriots wind up taking him. So the Giants, quote unquote, settle, I guess, for Malik Nabers, really good number one receiver. It gives Daniel Jones his first number one receiver in his Giants career. Round two, they get their new free safety replacing Xavier McKinney. That would be Tyler Newbin. Round three, the Giants get a corner who can play in the slot or outside. They're going to begin him in the slot, Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. We'll see. Does that mean Cordell Flott starts opposite Deontay Banks? If Phillips starts, I don't know. We'll see. And then round four, a little Darren Waller insurance in case Waller retires. That would be the tight end from Penn State, Theo Johnson. And then the Giants round out their draft in rounds five and six, respectively, with Tyrone Tracy, gives them some running back depth, and Darius Muasau, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, and the six-round linebacker, inside linebacker depth from UCLA. As far as the Jets go, first round, they take, as we expected, it was either going to be receiver or offensive line, offensive tackle. Rome Odunze goes ninth to Chicago, so the Jets pivot. They trade back to one spot. Smart, because Minnesota wanted to move up for J.J. McCarthy, who the Giants passed on, obviously. And so Olu Fashanu is the pick at 11. As we mentioned before, there's 0% chance that Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses will both make it through the season fully healthy. So the pick makes sense. Got to protect Aaron Rodgers. They did pass on Talese Fuaga, who goes, 14th. He went 14th, so three spots later. So we'll see how that winds up working out to the Saints. Round three, the most immediate impact player, they had no pick in round two, obviously, for the Jets because of the Rodgers trade. Round three, Malachi Corley, who's going to be their new slot receiver, and Andy can correct me if I'm wrong on that. He's going to be they need him to make an immediate impact in a win now year. Oh, they're a 1 year team. And then the rest of the Jet draft, one pick in round four, and then three in round five, depth picks. Braylon Allen, a running back in round four, and then Jordan Travis in round five, probably going to redshirt this year with Tyrod Taylor being the backup, but an interesting developmental quarterback in round five, and then another depth running back, Isaiah Davis in round five, and then Quantes Stiggers, the cornerback from the CFL who did not go play in college. Interesting story. It's not like he's going to be a starter for this defense. So the thumbnail sketch here for the Jets is they go heavy on offense, which is obviously their big time problem area, and their defense is in really good shape. They did get their receiver, the slot guy, Corley, physical dude, and they did get their offensive.
Did you mention Mr. Irrelevant?
Oh, you know what? I didn't scroll far enough down. The Jets made so many trades on this list I'm looking at that there's all these spots where they say traded two. And then there's Jalen Key, the safety from Alabama. How about Alabama, Mr. Irrelevant, all the way to 257. So they have all these slots. If you look on the Wikipedia page for what the Jets did in the draft. Yeah, it's just so convoluted, but that's what they wound up with. And then we don't need to go through all the dumb trades, but that's what they wound up with in
There
terms
was,
of.
yeah, there was six on Saturday, five on Saturday alone, including John Franklin
My
Myers.
gosh. Yeah, and yes, thank you, Andy, for correcting me. And we as we welcome Andy in, they did trade as they needed to get rid of him for monetary cap reasons. So, Andy, how you doing? Have you emerged from your draft
Good.
exhaustion?
Not, 100%. When you're going, once you're going to bed at 2 or 3, and you got to get up and make sure you've got the best available prospects post ready to go, and obviously they're trading, and we were there as late as possible on Saturday. Not complaining. It's the longest like 3 day stretch of the year. I mean, some training camp stretches there. That first stretch of training camp would rival it for us, but yeah, it's definitely, and there's so much information. I mean, because you can pretend as much as you want that you've been paying attention to the scouting process, but there's no way once they get to the last day that, it's 50-50 if you've even heard of the guy before they pick him. So, or if you've heard of him, that you know anything of detail about him. So it's an interesting education, and it's always interesting to see these guys' backstories. And like you mentioned, the Jets have some cool ones.
Beats digging ditches, I guess, at least most of the time. So I just want to get your thoughts on the Jet draft, and we'll just skew it to the top here. We don't need to go super in depth with, no offense to Isaiah Davis, but give me your thoughts on Fashanu and Corley. Joe Wall went fifth, and I guess they listed the other offensive lineman as a guard. That we were going through before the draft, that would be Troy Fatanu. He went 20th to Washington. But in terms of the tackles, Ault goes fifth to the Chargers, where there were no trades in the top six. The Giants wound up taking Neighbors. Maybe they would have taken Ault if he was there for them. He was not. Then J.C. Latham from Alabama goes seventh to the Titans. He really shot up draft boards, it seemed, toward the end of this process. That leaves the Jets at 11 or at 10, right? Picking between Fashanu, I presume, and Fuaga, and then they go 11 and 14. And so just give me your thoughts on that and also on the Corley pick.
Yeah, well, just the way the board fell, it looked really good for the Jets for a long time, because I think, you can say whatever you want about Brock Bowers, but the second that Joe Douglas mentioned Brock Bowers, went out of his way to mention him before the draft and his pre-draft availability, and basically any pre-draft availability he had, it was pretty obvious to me they weren't going to pick him. Joe Douglas is a guy who does not like project what he's thinking. It's usually
Except
anything
when
that's
he inadvertently
projected
does by
is
doing that.
false. Yes. Yeah, exactly. By trying so hard to get people thinking that it was out of character for him. So I did write that before the draft, and it played out that way. The interesting choice there for them is they clearly, I think you got more honesty from Joe Douglas on Thursday night than you usually get as well. He would not answer when asked if Adunze was there at 10, if he would have picked him. He said he wasn't there. He would have picked him.
He would
And if
have,
there's any
yes,
criticism,
100%.
yeah, 100%, not without a doubt. And if there's any criticism, I think there's a fair criticism. They should have been more aggressive and potentially traded up at 8. But it was a tricky board as the way it played out, because at 8, the Falcons ended up making the most shocking pick of the first round in Michael Penix. So they clearly, weren't going to give up that pick for cheap. So I mean, that's kind of nitpicking, and funny enough, Isaiah Davis was the other pick I would nitpick, because it didn't make any sense. But I'll go back to that quickly. But yeah, and then with Corley, I mean, he's a guy who was first with Fashanu or Fashanu. It's one of those two, and there's too many names that start with F. I almost said Fuaga there, but with Fashanu, I think a lot of Jets fans were upset because his team has been like kind of win now mode. Not kind of. I mean, they have been. Everything they've done has been for 2024, and even to the point where it's been out of character for Joe Douglas. And then they make this pick that seems like it's for the future, and it is for the future. But also with those two guys, like you said, at tackle, it's not just for the future. It's a very smart pick for this year, and it could end up being more valuable than getting a receiver there. I still think the line is deep enough to kind of hold together, and they've proven, as bad as they were last year, they weren't like the by far the clear worst offensive line in the NFL. Like, if you have a good enough quarterback and good enough weapons, they'll be able to get rid of the ball quickly, and I think potentially find some success. But I do think it's almost, there's not a world where you can't imagine him playing this year, and I do think, he'll compete for a starting job,
Really?
and potentially win it. Yeah, because I mean, look, Morgan Moses, man, he's coming off pectoral injury, had surgery in January. We've seen how, and guys in their mid-30s, how, it can take longer. I mean, look at Dwayne Brown. He's not as old as Dwayne Brown. He's 33, but you just never know. And if he's not 100% at the start of training camp, Bashan was going to start there at right tackle, start a training camp. And if he plays well, why would they give the job back? So, I mean, that's that. I think all this talk about him maybe moving to guard seems like a terrible idea to me. I don't see that happening for 1 year, especially with the injury stuff they've had with AVT. But I do think this is a pick that is not only good for the future, but helps the Jets now. And then going back to Corley, Douglas says they started trading up in the middle of the second round. They're trying to trade up. They end up getting him with a 65 fifth overall pick, the first pick in the first round, third round. A very interesting guy because obviously his productivity is remarkable. He's called the Yak King because he led college football in yards after the catch. The guy is a dynamic playmaker, but he's not super fast. He's not super big. And you, it is, it seems to me like it is like a boom or bust pick. Like if he can find the space, if he can break the tackles at the pro level, he'll probably be fine and be pretty good right away. But if he's not, if he's slow adjust to adjusting to it, if his speed, which is, sub 4.5, if that is keeping him from getting open in the NFL, or if he's not quite strong enough to break those tackles, I mean, which is very, very possible and plausible. It could be a tough adjustment. And, we've seen the Jets add guys that they thought they had a spot for, and like Mecole Hardman, and had nothing for him. So, I mean, there are some hurdles to overcome there. I think I do like the pick, though. I think, that's exactly what the Jets offense need, a guy who you can get the ball to quickly near the line of scrimmage, and he can make things happen. And I think, the upside of him is to be like, have the impact of one of those first round guys, but he's going to have to make that adjustment. And there's question marks, not just with him, but is the offensive staff going to be able to put him in the best position to succeed, which we did not see at all last year, but they didn't do it with anybody. So, those are fair questions.
And
And then
he's
the
got
last thing, real quick, on the running backs in the later rounds. They added two running backs. I don't understand why they added the second running back, even though their option on the board as Isaiah Davis. But other than that, I agree pretty much. You see what they were doing this draft, and was smart. They had a lot of talent at offense. Sorry, go ahead.
they I mean they need well one quick thing on Fashanu and then back to Corley. Joe Douglas went on ESPN radio and he said that the plan is to start to begin, right, to have Fashanu begin as a left tackle, but it'll get some reps at right tackle and maybe other positions. I think that opens the door certainly for him to start maybe at right tackle. I think more likely he was beat out Morgan Moses at right tackle than Tyron Smith at left. Correct
Yes.
me, I'm way off there. And the guard thing, we'll see. But back to Corley. Look, I mean, they needed to get somebody to take pressure off of Garrett Wilson, and they are going with this fingers crossed approach that Mike Williams can stay healthy and be durable, and maybe he can be that guy because, Lazard stunk last year and he was no good. So, I mean, I don't see him being any good this year. Can Corley help take the pressure off Wilson? That's what this all boils down to. I mean, that's why they wanted Rome Odunze, and there you go, right? So, like that huge pressure on this kid as a slot receiver, as a rookie. Got to go out there and produce immediately. There's obviously an enormous amount of immediacy with this Jet team, and you wonder if Corley's up to that task as a rookie. And it would be through no fault of his own if he has a rookie learning curve, but they can't afford that.
Absolutely, and I expect him to play in the slot because Robert Saleh said he could play everywhere. Well, he played 92% of his snaps in college in the slot,
He's
and
going to play in the slot.
the Jets don't have. I mean, they again, if you listen to the Jets, they talk every guy they talk up Xavier Gibson. They say the whole reason Hardman didn't play was because of Xavier Gibson, except for Randall Cobb took all of Hardman's snaps. It wasn't Gibson. Gibson ended up being almost a non-factor aside from that kickoff return to start the season. They're not clearly, but this pick tells you they're not sold on Gibson. No matter what they want to say publicly, just watch the reps in training camp. Like, he's going to play in the slot, and they're going to need him to contribute right away. And really, that's the most important thing. Like what you just said is he needs to just be good enough to where defenses can't, double Garrett over the top every have safety shading on him every time they drop back in an obvious passing situation. That's really all they need from this kid.
He's gonna be their starting slot receiver, and if he's not, that's a huge indictment and a huge problem. Switching
Exactly.
gears
On
to the
everybody, the
Giants.
coaching staff, the talent evaluation, the whole thing.
Switching gears to the Giants, I'll go through it and just curious to get your thoughts on it. Obviously, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, 1-2, no surprise. Then it's because the tipping point was the Patriots, the turning point or whatever. And it became clear that they were not gonna trade out of the pick. The Giants were very aggressive. Let's call this what it is. The Giants wanted to divorce Daniel Jones. Period. End of discussion. They wanted to replace him with Drake May. This is not that hard to figure out. Now, Drake May goes to New England, and then of course Marvin Harrison, Jawalt, and then that leaves the decision for the Giants. Okay, Neighbors or J.J. McCarthy, and then I guess you could throw Penix in there. But I don't think Penix was ever going to be a realistic option at six because of his injury history, and they had just have dealt with an injury riddled quarterback in Daniel Jones. Well, let's see what history says. I think that, Malik Nabers will have to be really, really bad. Even if J.J. McCarthy's good, I think Nabers will have to be really, really bad for the Giants to regret this pick. They can always revisit quarterback next year. This seems like the move by a GM who thinks he's going to get another year. And who will next year be? Will it be Carson Beck, Shedeur Sanders, maybe Dak Prescott in free agency? I mean, the clock is ticking on Daniel Jones. Given the fact that they can get out of his contract ever this year, I know he's somehow gotten his 6th year as the unquestioned starter, but I mean, he will have to perform at a level that is so beyond what he's done, and he's going to have to stay healthy. And there's all these questions about the offensive line. And yes, he does have a number one receiver, so no more excuses there. Blah blah blah. One thing to remember. He's got a $30 million salary for 2025. Daniel Jones does. $23 million of that is guaranteed against injury right now. So what that means is, if it's October or November and he tears his ACL again, the Giants, and he can't pass physical next March, and the Giants want to release him, they are on the hook for $23 million. It basically handcuffs them. So to me, and I wrote this week, if your season is circling the drain, and ownership needs to tell this coach and GM, listen, you're safe. Put Jones on the bench. We know Drew Lock stinks, and he stinks. Okay, he stinks. Then you need to put Jones in bubble wrap because you got to be able to preserve the ability to safely cut him next offseason. Anyway, that's a way off, ways off. But they take Neighbors at six, so passing on McCarthy. They wanted Drake May, but it was a May or nothing draft. They didn't take any other quarterback, and I can understand the logic because in the NFL, it's like an all or nothing proposition to quarterback. Either you have a really good guy or mediocrity gets you nowhere, right? So why take another mediocre or in what they view as a mediocre quarterback, right? I understand it. It makes sense, right? Either get the guy you think for sure is a total upgrade, or just stand pat. Okay, look, like I think that makes sense. Like, the Vikings did settle after trying to trade up for May, but they're in a more dire quarterback situation, and ditto for the Broncos, a more dire quarterback situation. They had nobody in Minnesota and Denver, and so the Giants at least have Daniel Jones, and I think this shows a little, patience from Joe Shane, and maybe that ownership has conveyed to him and Brian Daboll, look, you're not going to be 3 and done after we went 2 and done with these other coaches. So I know Giants fans are disappointed, and we'll see if there's reason for them to be. But that's my thoughts on where they what they did there.
It's hard to fault it, like you said.
Yeah,
Like you,
I think
it's
the
hard
logic
because there's
makes sense.
nothing worse than reaching. You can't reach for a quarterback you don't think is the guy. And there are reasons that these guys weren't 2 months ago, they weren't projected anywhere near the top 10. And
You
then
can't,
desperation takes over. And
because
like it
either
was,
the
and
guy's
you're
a
taking.
starter, or he's a failure. That's it. Right? I mean,
Yes, exactly. And if you don't believe in him, like you're, it makes it, that's, I mean, honestly, it's, that's the kind of move that could accelerate your firing, It's one thing if you miss on a can't miss guy like a Sam Darnold, which was kind of like the view back then. But once you get to that second tier of guys, and then the other thing is like you're talking about with Neighbors, one of arguably the top two or three talents in the entire draft. Like that's how high he was
Yes.
consensus on everybody's board. Like it is the right pick. If you want to argue that they should have traded up, fine. But when they couldn't and when they got to where they were, it's 100% the right pick. It's hard to find fault in it.
I agree. And I'm certainly not one to fluff the Giants, but I think that this makes sense here. The logic at least behind it. Right, as I said, if you reach for a quarterback, the consolation prize of a guy being a backup, big deal. That's a total failure. Now, on the other hand, it is worth being bold at quarterback if you like a guy, because the payoff is if they had traded up to three for Drake May and traded a haul for him and he wound up not being good, like it's hard to fault that because the reward for being bold at quarterback is outweighs the detriment of failing, if that makes sense, right? Because the payoff at the position is so much larger than other positions. And so I think, if they go for it, take that swing. And they did. They attempted it. And they offered a 2025 first round pick for these reports saying the Giants offered two first round picks. Okay, so I'm looking at this from Mike Reese. ESPN does a great job. Okay, they offered six this year and 25, and then they're 22. No, they didn't offer two first round picks. That's not what that is. That's a pick swap. You're always going
Yes.
to have the trade down. You can't count that as what you're offering. What are you going to say? Oh, we want your number three. But we're only going to offer one first round pick. It'll be next year, and we'll stay at six. Well, where were the Patriots going to go? That's not offering two first round picks. It's offering one first round pick, but that's still obviously a bold offer. Anyway, that's like a little rant about the semantics of how people write that stuff. So, yeah, look, I mean, we've written
That's
so much.
yeah, like it's that's a bold offer, yeah,
It is. I mean,
exactly.
they tried really hard, and the Vikings tried really hard. And you know what? The Patriots owner, who has won a million games and however many Super Bowls, Robert Kraft is, I'm looking it up, okay? The man is 82 years old. He's about to be 83. Okay. Most people, 83, they got a foot in the grave or they're 6 feet under. Okay, not to big light of this, but like how many years does the guy actually have left on planet Earth to try to go win another Super Bowl? It makes sense to go get your franchise quarterback, right? Like
Especially when you're trying to move past the legacy of Belichick and preserve your own, proving that
Sure,
you
like
made the right
he's
decision, right?
83 years
Yeah.
old. I mean, I think that plays a part in this too. He's not going to be
No, for
patient.
sure.
Why should he be? So that's, look, I mean, how right is he going to live to be 93? Like, how many people live to be 93? I mean, so Patriots winning a Super Bowl and this guy's in the grave, he's not going to take a lot of pleasure from that, right? What difference does it make? So, I mean, look, that's the way it is. But into that end, look, John Mara is going to be 70
Yeah.
in this year. Right? How much longer does he want to wait around for another Super Bowl? But it's even more extreme for Robert Kraft. He's a bit more than a decade older. So they make the smart move. They take Drake May. And I think, okay, even if the owner's 40 years old, right? I think it's probably a smart move for the Patriots to do that. Why waste a year if you're the Patriots on Jacoby Brissett? And
Yeah,
then
you don't have a quarterback. One of the top three guys are available.
just do it.
Consensus,
Yeah.
yeah, it makes.
And
And then that's the
imagine.
thing also, like you can't trade down or up if the team doesn't want to do it. We forget that. I feel like
And I
sometimes.
understand, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Drake May because everyone's going to couch it and like, oh, well, they turned in all these picks and they got you. Okay, there's always going to be pressure on him, certainly. There's just so much pressure on the kid for so many reasons. The
Even if it was
Giants.
any other team, number three in the draft, there's going to be
Yeah, so many
insane amount
reasons.
of pressure on
The
them. Yeah.
Tom Brady factor and all that. But like the Giants screwed themselves because they couldn't lose enough. They didn't lose enough. They started 2-8. They finished 4-3. Okay, the Tommy DeVito stuff, it screwed them. I was writing it at the time, right? They beat Washington, they beat New England. I'm sorry, but that's what happened, okay? They didn't lose enough. And will they regret it? I don't want to hear people get sick of hearing. I'm sorry, but that's an enormous storyline. Look, the Trevor Lawrence has not been as good as he could be. And maybe he would be not good at all if he was with the Jets. But very clearly, the Jets would have loved to have lost enough to get Trevor Lawrence instead of Zach Wilson, right?
Of course,
Anyway, so
Braden Mann making a play at the wrong time.
you could play that game a lot, but I think that anyway, Moving on around Tuesday.
Well,
Go
real
ahead.
quick, just going back to you, it's not just last year. It's that they won too much the year before too, because that it set like a whole chain of obviously you
Yeah, they
said that
gave
too.
Jones
And
2 years,
that,
82 million.
yep, because think about it, they put pressure on the coaching staff to improve the next year, even though the roster wasn't very good. They had to re-sign Daniel Jones, and then they get in a situation where they're in purgatory. They miss out on what they really needed by a
Good
pick.
point. I mean, and they lucked into so many wins in 2022. I mean, it's very obvious, right, looking back, that it was a mirage. I mean, the Giants and PFF's ratings in 2022 were 29th. They went 10-8-1, counting the playoffs, and they were the 29th rated team in PFF. What that means is they won a lot of games in spite of their objective performance.
Yep. It's
Anyway,
good luck and bad luck at the same time.
yeah, and exactly, great way to put it. Round two, 39, they trade it to Carolina. That certainly, could they have used that as ammo and a trade up offer? Would the Patriots have taken it? We'll never know. But I'll tell you what it does is puts an enormous amount of pressure on Brian Burns, along with the contract. In fact, they traded a borderline first round pick for him to perform at a level that he has not performed at in his career. Like, that was always my thing with the Burns trade. I know people want to like throw roses at them for that, and it was a bold move, but man, that's a lot to invest in a guy who is not approach the TJ Watt level. He better play like TJ Watt, or that trade is going to be a failure. Just like the Darren Waller trade has been a failure, even though they gave up less for him. But you know, look, two different players, two different situations. Maybe Burns comes in and he's great. They did need another edge rusher. I get it. The Tyler Newbin pick in round two, big shoes to fill. Obviously, Joe Shane didn't want to invest a lot of money in safety. Let Xavier McKinney walk. Didn't want to invest a lot of money in running back. Let Saquon Barkley walk. And he'll have an enormous amount of egg on his face, Shane will, if Barkley just kicks their tail with the Eagles this year. But we'll see. It's unfair to expect Newbin to come in and play like McKinney did last year, because McKinney had a great year. But they got 4 years of cost-effective play from McKinney, because he was a second-round pick in 2020, right? So they'd love to get that from Newbin. You know, good, really good play for not much money, relatively speaking. Okay, I don't know what you can expect from from in this year. They need Deontay Banks to anchor their secondary. Bottom line, got to play like a number one corner. He didn't do it last year. Uneven rookie year. I mean, their secondary is Banks and then either McLeod or Flott at the other side, and then either Flott or Drew Phillips in the slot, and then a safety duo of Jason Pinnock and Newbin. I mean, that's awfully green. That's an awfully green group. As far as the fourth round pick, the tight end Theo, this is the third year Joe Shane has made a significant-ish move, or greater than significant-ish, on tight end. Daniel Bellinger, round four, 2022, has not worked out. Traded a third round pick and invested however much money through the payment through Waller. Definitely has not worked out. So now round four, Theo Johnson. We'll see. You know, their
Well,
depth chart.
Waller's stringing out the Giants more than Aaron Rodgers strings out every team at the end of his career.
I mean, they have to have operate. They need to operate under the assumption that he's not going to be back. So they did, and that's what they're doing. I mean, so Theo Johnson and Daniel Bellinger. I mean, this offense, to me, I mean, Malik Nabers has got to be like Jerry Rice in year one. I mean, Theo Johnson and Daniel Bellinger as your tight ends, Devin Singletary and Eric Gray slash Tyrone Tracy as your running backs. Your receivers are Malik Nabers, Jalin Hyatt, Darius Slayton. Ugh, I mean, how many 6-3 games can this team win? I think that becomes the question. And you know what? It's going to go on Brian Daboll's shoulders, because let's see if he calls the plays in this high pressure year. And then you know, okay, we'll see how much of a miracle worker he is on offense. Of course, Isaiah Hodgins is back, but they phased him out. They got Isaiah McKenzie. He's a gimmick guy, but they need Hyatt. They need Wandale Robinson, who I didn't mention, and they need Slayton. You know what Slayton is at this point, but they need Wandale Robinson and Hyatt to take the next step, and
Oh,
maybe
well,
this.
he's Slayton healthy too, because they need that too. They need every bit they can get. But
Who's that?
Slayton. But they need him to be healthy. But yeah, you can't expect him to be more than what he is at this point.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I just. I mean, if your receiver trio is Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, and Nabers, I mean, you're gonna go double up on Nabers and try to like let those other guys beat you. I mean, this to me, like, Slayton is now a bit of an afterthought, but they need, I mean,
Yeah. Well,
they
it's
need
what the Jets.
everything to go right, everything to go right on their offense. I mean, especially the fact that their offensive line still has a guy at the right tackle spot who has been horrible through 2 years. So
Yep.
I don't see a lot for this Giant offense in 2024. Now,
And by the way, it doesn't mean just from covering Garrett Wilson the last 2 years, it doesn't mean that Neighbors isn't going to be a stud and he isn't going to be productive. It just means that, like, it doesn't matter. He could still go for, 85 catches and 1,000 yards or 1,100 yards like Garrett Wilson did each of his first 2 years. And it doesn't mean it's a functional offense. They need one of those other guys to be productive
And it was always
for
going to
the
be,
offense to work.
it was going to be quarterback or receiver, right? So say they had picked Drake May, and then everyone get excited. It doesn't mean they're going to be good immediately, but at least it gives people this hope for the future. I think you have to look at Neighbors like that. Like, okay, so if they had gotten Drake May, then they were going to have to be sitting here and waiting for their team to have a number one receiver next year. So you're never going to be able to get both. They had too many roster holes. You traded away 39. You needed to fill the safety spot probably in the second round, which they did. So it was either going to be elite receiver or quarterback, and they tried to for a quarterback, and it didn't work out. So yeah, I just it was never going to be a perfect Giant offense this year, but I think people look at it and say, oh, there's all these flaws, and at least if there were flaws and you had a quarterback, it's like you could feel like, okay, we're building towards something. I think you kind of, if you want to look at it optimistically, is we're building towards something with these pieces, and then next year there could be a quarterback coming in, and who knows who that guy could be. Again, I think if it's Dez, it could be Dak Prescott, right? I mean, like, what if, by the way, what if Bill Belichick's running the whole show next year in East Rutherford?
Yeah,
I think nothing's off the table because of how dysfunctional the Giants were last year.
I honestly think, look, if you start looking at the league, and I'd rather be at this point, because it's easier at the end if the last thing you have to do. I mean, the Jets now, obviously, worked out horribly last year, but the Jets are an example. The Niners are an example. I mean, they lucked out with Purdy, but still other also found other options. Like, you can find the quarterback who's good enough to take you there if you have to. I mean, the Rams, look at the Rams. The Lions, I mean, same thing. None of those guys ended up in their spot the way anybody thought they would get there. So
Good point.
I think if anything, I would feel like that this is so much better than reaching for a guy who is not a top 10 pick. I mean, yeah, maybe you'd feel good about it and hopeful in the moment, but then, like, there's going to be maybe some of these guys, like, one of them could overperform. We've seen it before, but knowing what we know now, it just doesn't make sense. If he's not one of your guys, you can't reach, because that's how you compound and get yourself into places where you get fired.
Great point. And before we wrap it up, just one quick, we didn't really talk about the John Franklin Myers trade. Obviously, getting Hassan Reddick was sort of the writing on the wall, along with the trade for Reddick was the writing on the wall, along with the fact that Franklin Myers had his cap number was too big. But so a lot of moving pieces here on this front, this really, really good Jet defensive front, and you're talking about a group that was excellent last year, and so they lose Franklin Myers, or they trade him away. More accurately, they lose Bryce Huff. Reddick comes in. They need McDonald to step up. They need Jermaine Johnson to have another good year. So, what is the state of that defensive front with Quinnen Williams? So the starters would probably be Quinnen Williams and Reddick, Jermaine Johnson, and Will McDonald, right? Is that, and how do you view the totality of that?
Well, I think it'll be Kinlaw, the defensive tackle, the former first round pick they added from the 49ers in free agency, which I mean, they paid a lot of for him. So I think he's gonna start alongside Quinnen, and then it'll be Reddick and Jermaine Johnson, with McDonald working in there. Yeah, it's look, they're off their defensive line is arguably more talented than it's ever been. Their depth is not where it was. And this wasn't like they could have kept Franklin Myers. They couldn't. I mean, they barely right now have enough cap space to field their roster after clearing $7 million in that trade, which was nothing. They got a 2026 sixth round pick. It was a salary dump because they had no choice. And the fact that they were able to get anything in return is is good. I mean, they were able to, they saved more money by trading him. They had to trade something. So, and also they obviously saved, another. You couldn't obviously the pick was terrible for Zach Wilson, but the fact that they were able to get the Broncos to pay $2.75 million and take that off the cap for a guy who's shown nothing. And obviously they got a sixth round pick in there that ended up, I think they used it in the draft. I can't remember at this point. There's too many trades, but like that's where they're at. Like, this is part of the win now formula. You're going to have to make these decisions. Part of having all these talented players, you're going to have to make these tough decisions. I think there's more coming. Like, they're not keeping DJ Reed, Sauce Gardner, and Michael Carter at cornerback. So, I'm a little surprised almost that Reed didn't get traded. And I think it's something to watch moving forward. If things don't go well, or even if things are going well, they need to kind of make a move before training camp or during the season. Like, they can't pay all three of those guys. And Reed's going to be the odd man out because those slot receiver or slot corner is not as expensive. And it's just, they're obviously going to extend Sauce to a historic deal. So after the season, I would imagine. So yeah, like they've got a lot of tough decisions. This is a problem that comes with being a good team. It's okay. Nobody freak out. It's not like they're putting on this year. They had to move on from him. He had 17 and a half sacks, with 4 5 years with the team. It's definitely a loss because he's a guy that defense has had to pay attention to, but it's not, if they need to stay healthy, that's what it means. And Will McDonald needs to play well. But these are the kind of things you have to do when you're a good team. So I think the Jets, the talent is there. Will it all work out? I mean, the talent is clearly there. No excuses. They literally have everything they need right now, but a safety. There are question marks because of the cap situation and the way they had to build the roster. Within those constraints, it's hard to be highly critical of what they did, but there are a lot of, risky moves. And I'm not talking about financially risky. I'm talking about when you're banking on two 30 something year old tackles who have had injury histories or coming off of an injury. There's a reason the Ravens gave away Morgan Moses for not very much at all, even though he's on a great contract. So yeah, they need for some things to work out. And I think it's, very possible that some of those things will work out. I think they're going to be a pretty good team, but yeah, at the end of all this, looking at the way they did it, you can nitpick here or there, but yeah, I think they did a good job, and I think they're in a better position, a much better position right now than they were a year ago going into that season with all that hype, which is interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how the hype evolves between now and start training camp.
I mean, and bottom line on the Giants, I think that they did a perfectly acceptable job. I know that people will look back at it and perhaps depending on, I mean, to see how Drake May plays, but as maybe a missed opportunity, depending on what they do at quarterback next year. But the Jets will be fascinating. I think they could be really good. I don't think the Giants are going to be any good this year. We'll see what that leads to. So we'll leave it there. We appreciate everyone joining us as usual. NJ.com/Giants, NJ.com/Jets for all the coverage. Thanks for listening. Thanks for reading. Be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe, follow us on all your favorite podcasting platforms. And as far as our next one of these, we'll probably do something in a little less than a month leading into organized team activities. And I just, so like OTAs, mini camp, same thing. I'm going to call them spring practices. That's what they are. They're spring practices. And so leading into that,
Spring walkthroughs.
yeah, exactly. No pads. They do have helmets, but no pads, no contact. And so we'll do something leading into that, and then probably coming out of that, and then something leading into training camp. So that's the little quick schedule. We'll see when about 3 weeks from now, we'll come back. We'll do something leading into the start of spring and all the storylines. Since we did cover pretty much exclusively the draft here, so that's where it's at. And thanks everybody for listening. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your week, and we will talk to you all soon.